Hi, everyone. I'm Aaliyah Kemet, and welcome to Phenomenal Grit, career conversations for women of color. It's time to get intentional about why you are here. This podcast is all about winning. Winning at work, winning in your career, and finding happiness and joy in the process. Each episode, I'll either be talking to an amazing and inspiring guest or sharing stories and lessons from my own personal career journey. It's time to invest in you, with you. Let's get into it.
In honor of Black History Month, I've asked my cousin Erica Harris, group leader of banking and payment operations for one of the largest financial services companies in the country, to join me in reflecting on our own shared family history as descendants of a Tulsa race massacre survivor. I sat down with Erica to dig deep into how our family history has enabled our own phenomenal grit. So Erica, I want to start by talking about something that hit me personally really hard this summer after the death of George Floyd. And it was, as a Black woman being in corporate America, I really started to feel fractured. So on one hand, I was feeling this intense sadness that another Black man was killed so visibly and so horribly in front of all of us. And on the other hand, there's such an awakening that was seemingly happening with a lot of people that I work with or just across companies. And then there was this kind of other piece of it where I was glad to see so many people experiencing this awakening, but I don't want to actually be that person who's having to tell everybody's stories? Or am I the Black woman who is the representation for everything that you might know, because there's not very many Black people maybe who work here? And that was really a struggle for me. And then something else happened that felt even more personal. I think almost overnight, people started to talk about Tulsa, right? It was all over social media. They're talking about the Tulsa race massacre. It was on YouTube, even referenced in, I think, some corporate settings, this awareness of Tulsa that was always in our lives because of our history in our family, but it was jarring for it to be so present. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about our family's history and experience with Tulsa and the race massacre.
Absolutely, Aaliyah. I mean, what happened to George Floyd really just created a huge awakening that caused us to look at our history overall, right? And being that one person, as sometimes all of us are, we're that one person in the room and everyone looks to us as the representative, is hard, like you said. But I did experience some interesting, and I'll say some good things that came of it. One thing was that a lot of my colleagues actually personally reached out to me and called me. Are you okay? Can we talk about it? Can I understand it better? And I thought that was just amazing to be able to start to open up the conversation, set some context, and figure out how we could be better. So fast forward to today, which is represents the 100th year anniversary of the Tulsa, Oklahoma riots. It's a massacre. It was a massacre.
Absolutely.
From May 31st, 1921 to June 1st, 1921, over Memorial Day weekend. Aaliyah, we all know the story. We've known it and heard about it from our grandfather. Yeah. Our grandfather was a little over 6 years old when he experienced the massacre. We call this the single worst incident of racial violence in American history, right? I mean, there were private airplanes that attacked the city. There was, 35 square blocks of district was destroyed. And this was the wealthiest Black community in the United States. We call it our Black Wall Street. It was self-contained. There were banks, businesses, 30 restaurants, 40 groceries, dental offices. It was a city, a vibing city, full of independent, economically independent and empowered Black people. Okay?
It was literally burned, right?
It was burned to the ground. Mm-hmm. 300 killed. Well, they say in between 36 to 300 killed, hundreds and
That's
hundreds of injured.
Difference.
Right. Isn't that
crazy? Mm-hmm. I heard I'm seeing 36 and I'm like, okay, let me keep looking. And mm-hmm. then I'm seeing 300 mm-hmm. killed, 800 injured. There were even as recent as October, a grave site, unmarked grave site with 12 mm-hmm. bodies that they believe were from the Tulsa massacre mm-hmm. Recently discovered in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's amazing.
It's crazy. And why? Why did it happen? You know why it happened? Not because of the story they tell us, right? They tell us that a young black man, 19 years old, something happened in a elevator with a young 17-year-old white woman, and which she never did charge a prosecutor or make charges or anything, but they said he raped her, right? And so that's where it stemmed from. He was going to be hung by some of the whites that were coming to the courthouse to get him, and then the blacks came to protect him. So they started fighting. But what I think it really was about is about the blacks became too economically strong and too empowered.
That's
and
right.
And I think there's a level of, at that time, of course, white people didn't like that. These black people weren't bothering anybody. Our grandfather was 6 years old. He said that they lined the house with mattresses. They got down on the floor. Can you imagine?
Now, I have the quote. He says, our granddaddy says, my father and uncle barricaded the doors and windows of our house with mattresses from our beds and told us to lie on the floor. Outside, you could hear the bullets hitting up against the house. I mean, this is in America, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Where a mob comes to destroy your community. How is it that this history was hidden for so long?
And we heard about it directly from our grandfather.
That's right.
Right? Or else we wouldn't know.
I know. Right? We wouldn't have known. And we knew before so many others. Did you ever think of yourself as a descendant of the Tulsa race massacre? Like, and the meaning behind that? Like, I didn't until recently.
Yeah, I felt very proud, especially when the articles of our grandfather was published and when there was also talk about retribution from our government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, reparations from our government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when I heard about that, yes, I feel proud that you would finally recognize that this is something that happened to a whole community of thriving black people, and people came and took all of that away. All of what could have been ours, right? Where would we have been had we had that wealth that our ancestors built when they were coming up? They had to start from ground one.
Yeah, he said, we should say our granddaddy's name, girl.
James Titus Durant, born in 1915 on January 27th.
That's right. And he was educated at, Lincoln?
Lincoln University in Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And he was a man of Omega Psi Phi's for all you Qs out there.
If you think about it, you know, we have this rich legacy from him. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the things he said was that his family lost a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And things might have been different for him had it not happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I continue to reflect on that, especially with all this conversation right now about wealth and the importance of the Black community being able to thrive independently and economically. And we have a lot of conversations, and we could do that. That could be another another podcast about growing our wealth, growing our money. But when you think about it, but there was a lot lost.
Mm-hmm.
What was also gained?
So, you know, that's a good question, Aaliyah. When I think about what was gained, I mean, you can lose all of your things, right? Those are just things. Right? But what you keep are you and your characteristics. So I talk about, I love your podcast, Phenomenal Grit. I think this mm-hmm. is amazing and congratulations on it. I'm so happy to be here. But I think about their material things were gone. Their possessions were stolen away from them, but their grit, their resilience, their fortitude, bravery, whatever you want to say, their tenacity, it could not be burnt like the buildings that went down around them. And some on top of them.
And I think definitely for him and for some others, and there's probably a whole lot of families that never recovered.
Right.
Like our family recovered.
You're right.
Right?
You're right. And I'm interested. I would love to know, though, because Aaliyah, there was a population of Blacks who were independent and who, you know, had gumption. So I'm wondering how their descendants, how all their descendants were. I've read about a couple of them. They're doctors, they're lawyers, because their parents were self-sufficient. So they passed this down. So I'm just wondering as a whole how they're doing. They're educated. Mm-hmm. Our grandfather went to college. He went to grad school. He ended up being a principal at a charter school. Our grandfather. How many people can we say that are Black whose grandparents both went to college? Mm-hmm. Right? That's a thing. That's not a thing.
I mean, we really are blessed, I think, to have this rich kind of love, and education is a big thing in our family. So, you know, I think it comes from there. So, no, I'm really glad we're having this reflection. I think now is the time to have it. I was initially kind of jarred, like, oh, my God, like, everybody is talking about this now. What does this mean? But when you really reflect on it, it means it's a part of us, right? It's a part of us. And I think it's a part of our story and of the Black American experience in general. And I think it, you know, I'd love to think about that up against the careers we have. We both work in a corporate environment. I would love it if you could talk a little bit about your role. You are oftentimes the only or one of few Black people, Black women in the room. What is that like?
So I come from an accounting background, and so public accounting, and now I work for one of the largest financial services firms, and the environment is mostly white men, and I've grown up working side by side with white men. I used to, when I was younger, I used to walk into a room and count. I didn't have too many at times, but sometimes I had the opportunity to count. There was two or three of us, and I'm like, whoa, yes, we're making progress. But I stopped doing that, and I learned to work in those confines and to be more comfortable, because once you do that, you kind of first set yourself apart a little bit, and you feel a little bit isolated, and you can feel a little bit intimidated by it. So I've learned to just lean into that discomfort, and I learned to make those relationships be beyond just race, because there are all other things that we have in common. So
that's right. Do you think that people are intimidated being in the room with you when you're one of the only ones in the room?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I possibly, I'll give you an experience that I did have was came to one of my firms, and I ended up getting promoted above another white male who had come from a different firm, who I think they had talked to him and said, hey, we're going to promote you to this role, you know, if these things happen. But I got promoted before him. And I heard that he pulled some people aside and asked about why I got promoted over him. And he was just feeling, you know, some type of way about it. So I did. And the people that he talked to actually talked to me, which is why but that's neither here nor there. I ended up having a conversation with him because I knew he was also going to continue to be a leader within the firm.
That's right.
And really, I don't give into the way other people feel all the time. I don't, I'm not here to change your opinion, your belief or your mind all the time. But what I am here is to figure out how we can work together. And so by the time I finished with him, I kind of neutralized our relationship.
Right.
In a way that now our relationship is very good. And guess what? He's been promoted over me now.
Okay.
And so, and him and I have a very good relationship. So, and it's okay, because at the end of the day, what's for me is for me, and what's for him is for him. So he might have been intimidated by me, but I'm not intimidated by him. But my goal is in the organization to make sure that we're working together for the greater good and not worried about, you know, he say, she say, or all this stuff.
But you make a good point when you said that he went and spoke to some people. Those same people came and spoke to you. I think it is relevant. And I think it is because what it speaks to is your standing in this space. So you're in a space where you're one of very few Black people, let alone women, right? in the room, at the table, and you seem like you have really rich relationships with the white people who you work with. And I can relate to that. I think it's super important. I mean, I think when you show up to be excellent, you know, and I'm not going to say, oh, race just goes away, because I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that excellence will stand for itself. And I think that is what you have done. And I'm wondering if you can just expound a little bit more on how you have developed this type of close relationships with the people that you work with.
You know, I think one thing is everybody has the different beliefs, experiences, backgrounds. I try to always start in a position of assuming good intention, right? Mm-hmm. And so in doing that, I approach things where I'm a very friendly person, and people always remark, I mean, the partners in my firm's like, where's that smile? So I'm very upbeat. And then I'm very focused on what our responsibilities are. And it's to add value to our clients' lives. Mm-hmm. And so if you make sure that you're focusing on that thing and connecting with other individuals within your company on that, that's great. And also, if you can go beyond that to develop relationships where you have something that's in common, right? Because once you start to get those commonalities, they just start to just go crazy. I have an experience with another white woman who, at the same time, I got promoted fast when I came to the company. Mm-hmm. And I got promoted to her level, and she had been at the firm for 25 years, and she felt a certain kind of way as well. And so our working relationship wasn't as great, and people could see it. In fact, our partner that we reported to, he asked me about it. He said, you know, I was in this meeting, and I just didn't like the way that, you know, she said something or responded to something, and is there a problem? And I said, not with me, not at all. I said, I don't know what it is, because I didn't have a problem, honestly. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up having a conversation with her. I don't know what was said, but fast forward, she ended up going through a tough time in her life where she got divorced. And the same thing has happened to me in my life. And she opened up to me and started talking to me about it. And so we had that commonality, and we started to talk more and more and more. And then, and fast forward to today, if I want to go over to her house to have a glass of wine, here I am. I try not to hold a grudge. I don't. Actually, I honestly do not hold a grudge. I understand. I would probably feel some kind of way if somebody came in. And,
I don't know, Erica. I don't know.
I wonder this, though. So if I were a white guy, would he have...
That's where I was going.
Yes.
That's where I was going.
But I'm not going to worry about that, Aaliyah. I'm not going to worry about that.
That's fine, but I'm going to double tap on it. And you don't have to respond. I know. I get it. But I think the reason why I'm just going to hit on it for a second is because I hear you, and as a Black woman, I do the same thing. Mm-hmm. We have these experiences, and I'm just going to call them microaggressions because I think that's what they are, that we then have to internalize, work through psychologically, emotionally, deal with, and then when things are okay, move past them for the greater good of the business. And I love that you've done that. And this is probably why you're very successful, because emotional intelligence is such a
huge
part.
Oh my God, it's huge.
A huge part of what we do. But if you were a white guy, and you know, we don't know, do you think everyone would have such a problem every time you get promoted? I mean, you seem to be getting promoted a lot, honey. And if you were, which happens to people, it happens. I mean, there are white guys I've seen promoted. Nobody's getting upset about it. Mm-hmm. And I've heard this from other Black women as well, that there is unrest when they experience promotions and other people of color. And so I do think, while we don't necessarily have to spend a lot of time on it, it's something to reflect on. Mm-hmm. Because it is a part of our experience.
And it's, you know what, it's not going to go away, and we're going to have to learn to deal with it. What you have is, you have a majority who has been in roles that they are, I'm not going to say they have privilege, but it is kind of privilege. This is an expectation, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now you have women in the workforce that are also assuming these roles. And now you have black women who are assuming these roles, not enough. And you have black men who are assuming these roles, not enough. But mm-hmm. it's still seemingly, if you're the white guy,
Latino,
and our Latino and brothers and sisters, and our Asian brothers and sisters, if you are a white guy, you're feeling like, hey, what's up? You're on my territory a little bit. Well, no, we have to have this growth mindset.
Right.
Right? Where everything that we're doing and everything for us is for us. And then there is space for everyone to be successful. If, mm-hmm. Even if it's maybe not at that organization. But we have to let people in. And I think that's something that we are going to together have to figure that out.
Yeah, I think that especially when you work in like a matrix organization, collaboration is key.
It is.
It is really, really important. So mm-hmm. I love that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. What are some of the things that you've done outside of work that you think have helped you also grow in your career?
I think one thing that is so important for everybody to do is to lead or actively get involved in organizations that align with your values and then lead in those organizations. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always just think of those as free opportunities to practice excellence, right? You're going to understand policy, procedures, how things are run. You're going to be able to practice being a leader in a setting that is much safer than you might in your day-to-day work, right? So, you know, I've been in active and involved, and I'm a lifetime member of the National Association of Black Accountants, is a professional accounting association with the goal of increasing the accountants or black accountants. And
you met your husband there.
And I met my husband there, who was just recently the national chairman of NABA. He's just now stepped out of that seat. Congratulations to the new chairman.
I used to call you guys. So when he stepped down from that, I was kind of like, oh, I can't call you like king and queen of NABA anymore. You're like, no.
I was the first lady of NABA.
First lady of NABA. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, but through that experience, though, you know, I've just built so many networks. Mm-hmm. I had so many insights or put into other companies, too. So if I wanted to work anywhere, I knew somebody where that, you know, within that company. So I just think it's so important. If you're getting involved in these organizations, I'm also a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, service to all mankind, definitely help with leadership skills as well and networking. And it's just a lifetime organization that I'm so proud to be in. But you have to get involved in something. You just mm-hmm. can't. You have to.
So when you're thinking about people wanting to take something from what you've done or learn from how you're moving forward, what are some of the other tips that you might have for them? I love how you talked about how you stopped counting mm-hmm. the people in the room that were of color because it helped you really kind of see the bigger picture. Are there any other tips or ideas that you might have that there's somebody out there who is that one, that only, that few in the room, mm-hmm. and they may not have the level of confidence, Erica, that you have today. So what would you tell them?
So it's stop counting and lean into the discomfort until it continues to get more comfortable for you. You'll be placed in those settings time and time again. Learn to accept it. Acceptance is very freeing, and then learn to work in it. So another thing I have is understand your personal why. Why are you doing something? Why are you connected to the values of the organization that you're in? If you're getting up every day and you're hating what you're doing and you're not working in your value or your why, it will be very hard to be successful. You'll never connect to your organization and you'll never be able to be as successful as you would if you were doing things that you were passionate about. So whatever you're doing, make sure it's connected to your why and you feel passion. I mentor a group of ladies at my firm now. And one of them, we're in an operations area, right? Mm-hmm. And she is by night a makeup artist. And so she's creating beauty inside and outside for women all over the area. And so she was talking about, we were talking about our whys. And her why and what she was loving to do was to make the business processes and the things that we do better and more beautiful. I was like, oh my God, you know, like, and it's operations, you know, so
yeah. She connected.
It might not be the sexiest thing to everybody, but right. she's able, that piece of making it better was her why. So find out what that is and focus on it. Another thing is have an opinion. You cannot get to our levels or levels hopefully we'll achieve even higher without having an opinion in the room. You have to open your mouth. You have to take a side or at least add some value to either side that's taken. Then people get to notice you and understand how your thinking is. And so that's very important to have an opinion.
So you're talking about speaking up at the table.
Yes.
Having your voice.
Yes. I got other ones too.
Okay, we got time for one more.
Another one's very, very, very important.
They're all important. Right?
They're so important, right? So having a sponsor, and that's different from a mentor, and knowing who your sponsors are. If you don't have someone in your organization that's taken an interest in you and pounding the table for you, then you'll have a hard time breaking into those more narrow opportunities that everybody doesn't get. And so you want to make sure you figure out who those sponsors are and try to create more and more sponsors.
But Erica, how do you, so I love that you brought up the difference between mentorship and sponsorship, but how do you identify, so you can't just walk up to someone and say, will you be my sponsor? But usually the sponsorship happens based on they've seen your work. You can go from mentorship to sponsorship, I think. But if someone doesn't believe they have someone at the table, pounding the table for them today, they don't have a informal or formal sponsor, any thoughts on how they might gain one?
Yeah. So I mean, you want to be a little bit strategic about it, right? Mm-hmm. And figure out who are those strong people in the room that people respect. Because not everybody in that room is respected by everybody, right?
That's right.
Okay. So we want to try to figure out who those people are.
And do they have influence?
And do they have influence? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And get on their calendar. Reach out to them. Tell them about what you're doing, how you're trying to add value to the company. Ask them how you could help what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start to do that, people generally enjoy mentoring people and helping people. So once you position yourself and they understand that, hey, we're all in this for the greater good, that could create at least one avenue. And then sometimes what I find is for my sponsors, they connect me with a whole bunch of other sponsors and influencers.
That's right.
And then they call them and say, hey, I told Erica about you. I want you to talk to her about X, Y, and Z. And so you continue to run that string up.
Yes. Now, what I don't want to happen is for people to hear us and say, Erica and Aaliyah told me to get on everybody's calendar. So I'm just going to add a bill to that, which is, you know what I mean? And I think you touched on this, but I just want to, one more time, really need to know what you're going to say. How many times can you think of people who've gotten on your calendar and they don't know why they're there? They're not asking for anything. They're not setting the agenda. When you get on someone's calendar, the onus is on you to set the agenda for that time, to not take up too much time, right? 15 minutes, 30 minutes, you can get a lot done. And to actually leave that meeting having offered something and having asked for something. And your offering should be bigger, I think, than your ask if it's like a first conversation, right? Because they don't know you yet. So what are you bringing to the table? What are you offering? That's just a little build I have.
Oh, Aaliyah, I couldn't have said it any better. So but you do have to try your best to expose yourself to others.
That's right.
You want people to know you and know what you're known for. And you want people to want to know you.
So what are you known for? At work?
That's a good question. I'm glad we're on this podcast. I think leadership. Mm-hmm. Overall, I'm known for being a strong leader, helping to drive results, and helping people to achieve some of the things they'd like to achieve as part of their career.
I think that's in the genes. I think Granddaddy would be proud of.
Yay!
Right. I bet you think so.
I miss him.
Yes, absolutely. And I think he would be proud. This has been awesome. I have one kind of final question. You talked earlier about how you're mentoring some ladies at work. Mm-hmm. Is that an informal or formal mentorship? And can you tell us a little bit about how that relationship came to be?
It's really, really recent that we started to do this. Another colleague of mine, we were talking about everything that's going on in the environment. We were talking about how the women leaders, Black women leaders in particular, are not getting to some of the levels that we would like to see them get to. And so we decided to have our own women's group within the area to talk about how we can leverage other resources so that these women can figure out how we can get to the next levels together. It's been amazing to revisit our whys and just kind of understand where we are today and what we need to do to get to where we want to be.
I love that. I am going to revisit my why.
Mm-hmm.
I am so happy that you came on Phenomenal Grit today. One, because you're my cousin, so I love that. But I think that you dropped some really awesome gems today for all of us, and I'm just so appreciative.
Aaliyah, thank you for having me. I am so excited about you and doing this Phenomenal Grit podcast. There are so many young ladies and women who are out there who need, and men, who need to hear these messages. And so you continuing to forge this path to provide that is just amazing. So thank you, and thank you for having me. And I love you too, cuz.
I love you too.
My grandfather, James Titus Durant, was one of the last remaining survivors of the Tulsa, Oklahoma race riots in the town of Greenwood in 1921. He shared with his children and grandchildren stories of how his family had to flee the destroyed town, which was known as Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and how it would forever shape his life. Hundreds of Black residents were massacred. About 10,000 people were left homeless, and property damage amounted to more than $1.5 million in real estate and $750,000 in personal property. This would amount to over $31 million in damages today. Later, he would serve our country in World War II and was a member of an engineering unit stationed in Willow Run, Michigan. He and the Black men who served with him helped design the tail section of a bomber plane. He told us all of the engineers stationed at Willow Run were hired by Ford Motor Company, and they would be the first Black engineers to work for Ford Motor Company. His is an indisputable great legacy, and I'm compelled to overcome any personal difficulty to excel in my career and honor his memory. Happy Black History Month. No grit, no pearl. You've been listening to Phenomenal Grit, Career Conversations for Women of Color, and this is your host, Aaliyah Kemet. Send me feedback or thoughts to Aaliyah at phenomenalgrit.com. That's Aaliyah, no Y's, no H's, A-L-I-A, at phenomenalgrit.com. Please subscribe to Phenomenal Grit and leave a rating or review wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.